Welcome to Simply Stogies. I am one of your hosts, James. Joining me this week as we take a little detour to the PCA, it's my friend, co-host, owner of LH Cigars, Cuban cigar expert extraordinaire, and all kinds of other flattering things I could say. Nick Sirius, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thank you, James. Always an honor to be on this show and to impart what little I know about cigars in general.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone listening and watching believes that. We've got a great guest, somebody who was down in Cuba with you, Nick, for the Festival de Habano. We'll get to him in just a second. I'm very excited to have him on. But before we do, like, we're talking about what? We're talking about the Festival de Habano today. We're talking about the PCA trade show. We're talking about all kinds of different things, which means that event season is in full swing. Guys, the best event you can go to, Mild Kentucky Herf, Ashland, Kentucky. Stephen, Dwight, and Tim there at Fat Ash. Mild Kentucky Herf, one of the best ones around. Look, the tickets went on sale March 1st. VIP early bird tickets, $200 after the end of March. They go up to $225. Here's what it gets you. It gets you an exclusive meet and greet access with the principals, blenders, and reps within the cigar industry. Luciano Cigars branded bag, a Mild Kentucky Herf t-shirt, and some swag. You'll also get a receipt. You'll get a free cigar from every manufacturer. Of course, it's an event. That's how these things work. You get to talk with them and you get a cigar. Look, you're guaranteed more than a box of cigars when you go to Mild Kentucky Herf. You're going to get a food ticket. There's raffles that go on all day. It is a great time. The food vendors are always awesome. I'm sure there's going to be bourbon vendors. There's always bourbon vendors there. And then there's ashtray vendors. There's all kinds of, just trust me, you guys don't want to miss this. Here's who's guaranteed to show up at this year's Mild Kentucky Herf: Luciano, Ricky Rodriguez from West Tampa Tobacco. We've got Justo Arroyo from JRE Tobaccos and Aladino, Brian Matola from Cavalier Cigars. And of course, Lou Cross from Lure Cigars. But Nick, here's who's rumored to attend. Are you ready for this? Here's who's rumored.
Yeah, I'd like to hear this. Yeah.
Tom Lazuca from Asylum 13, Oscar Valadares, of course, Hector Alfonso, Espinosa Cigars, Noel Rojas from Rojas Cigars, and Greg Free from FYL. Because I'm not going to try to pronounce the new one, but FYL Cigars. Greg Free's awesome. Been on the
Fuerte,
show.
Fuerte.
Yeah, well, it used to be. No, you can't
Fortaleza.
Say that.
No. Now it's called Fortaleza.
Fortaleza. Libre. Greg Free's always awesome. Guys, you've got to go. $200 right now through the end of March. Get you a VIP ticket. These will sell out. So look, join me there. It's going to be a lot of fun. And when you call, say hello to Dwight for me. Tell him James sent you. Here's who you're going to want to call. You're going to want to call them at 606-254-0484. That's 606-254-0484. I will put the number down there until right now. That's going to do it. Event season. Look, let's get to our guest, because our guest is awesome. And I'm very excited, if you can't tell, to have him here. He is a photojournalist. He is former photojournalist, documentarian, wedding photographer, a photographer extraordinaire.
Former.
He is now co-founder of Half Wheel and one of the editors, Brooks Whittington. Brooks, welcome to Simply Stogies.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thank you so much for coming on. I know you guys, both you and Nick, were at Festival de Habano. You both got back yesterday, day before, maybe? Yes.
Saturday night late.
All right. And I know that you're in Dallas. You're there at the Half Wheel headquarters. Let me ask you this before we get into all of the bona fides and everything you've done in the past. And we'll start with your birth. No, I'm joking. Just give me your overall sense of this year's Festival del Habano. Just overall, general, 30,000 foot kind of looking down at it. What were your feelings on it?
I think that it was, I think that it had some very bright spots to it, that things that they fixed that were major concerns in past years. I think that some things still need a little bit of help. And I think that they are trying to do better in most ways. And I think that's a very positive thing.
So overall positive, but it's like they're trying to get better.
Yes. Look, you know, a lot of times the problems that they have are probably somewhat accentuated by the fact that they're in Cuba, which is not the most well-run of countries for most things. And so, you know, you're going to have issues that are going to pop up just based on that alone. There have been problems with various things I'm sure we'll get into. But the show this year, I think they were really making strides and trying. And I can give you examples if you'd like, specifically.
Yeah, but yeah. Go ahead.
Like, better and trying to make it a more engaging, engaging event.
It's not cheap to go. It's not cheap at all to go. And it seems like I was looking through, you can go read his articles, guys, halfwheel.com. He's got day zero, day one, day two, day three, day four, and day five. And according to Nick, like this guy's always fucking working. Like always, like you sitting down at the table at the fucking festival, people around, you've got your laptop out, you're writing, you're fucking doing your thing. I mean, that's crazy. I go to an event and I'm like, let me get 10 minutes of
Brooks,
B-roll.
Brooks does not. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but the guy is literally when he wakes up, you know, bright and early, he's writing, he goes right, does all the stuff. He doesn't get to really experience it as, you know, like as a part, you know, as a participant for sure. I mean, he gets to see it and do it, but he's really busting his ass 24/7 when he is there. I'm sure he does it no matter where he goes. I don't know what other events he covers, but I guess it's the photojournalist slash ex, you know, documentarian slash wedding photographer. Cause that's what he's like. He's like taking pictures all the time. And when he's not taking pictures, he's writing shit down. So he does a good job.
I've got Charlie on my ass all the time too. So that doesn't help either.
Charlie seems like a nice guy. I can't imagine he's on your
own. He's a great guy. But he's very driven. and I tend to be lazy. So when it comes down to it, he's going to be the one who's in the bus.
I don't see the laziness coming out there. Maybe it's because he's cracking the whip on you, Brooks. I don't know. But you seem.
The thing with the show is that I'm not there to have fun. And I wish I was, because I think I'd be very, very different experience, as you mentioned, right? But I'm not there to have fun. I'm there to report. I'm there to get the information that I need. And there are people depending on what I'm writing. I'm not thinking that I'm more important than I am, I promise. But there are people who don't know anything about the show who really want to know what's going on. And so our job is to get it up as quickly as possible, get the information correct. And that's why I'm there. If I was there for fun, I couldn't afford it, first of all. So, I mean, that would be one thing. If I was there for fun, it would be a very different experience. But my job is to make sure that we get everything that we can up as quickly as possible.
Well, I think that's just kudos to you guys at Half Wheel to do that. Because I don't know if I could be in that environment and not kind of be pulled into the fun, especially when Nick's around. You kind of just get sucked into Nick's world, and it's like, you know.
Well, Nick's a fun guy, no doubt.
Well, let's talk about Nick for a second. Like, how did you and Nick initially meet? Do you remember, Brooks?
Vaguely. My first Nick, you can correct me if I'm wrong. My memory is spotty. Traditionally, however, my first Habanos Festival was in 2016. I had no idea what I was doing. Now, I had worked for newspapers and I had, shot for the Morning News and the Star Telegram, major newspapers, for years. And so it wasn't exactly I wasn't exactly a fish out of water, but, I didn't want to screw anything up and I wanted to make sure that I did everything correct. And I had no idea what I was doing in terms of Cuba specifically. And I don't know how I got in touch with Nick, maybe a forum of some sort, maybe Facebook. I don't honestly remember. But he hooked me up with a place to stay. He hooked me up with, suggestions on what to do. I wouldn't be here, you know, specifically where I am in terms of Cuba coverage without him. I would have absolutely, you know, probably said, this is stupid. I'm leaving. Goodbye. And never come back. Because Cuba is not the place to go if you don't, you know, if you don't have contacts and you don't have the confidence to do things. It'll suck you out and suck you in and spit you out pretty quick.
Yeah. So let me add that we met because a mutual friend of ours, Luke, Dr. Luke from, Doctor. I guess he's from Houston. Anyway, he reaches out to me literally like 2 days before. And he says, hey, I got a buddy of mine. His name is Brooks from Half Wheel. He's coming to Cuba. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, can you help him out? I go, what does he need help with? And he's like, well, he has no idea. He's just showing up. I'm like, well, I don't even know what the guy looks like. I go, he won't have a phone there. I go, how am I even going to? I'm like, oh, shoot. So I said, all right, tell him to meet me at in front of this hotel at this time. I mean, do you remember that? Like, I literally had no idea. I didn't have a picture of you. I had no idea what you looked like. So I walk up there. I'm looking for you. There he is standing there. I was like, literally the day before, I just scrambled and I found a little place around the corner from that particular hotel to put him up. Not the greatest place, but it wasn't like I had any time to do anything.
It was so, fine.
Yeah. Somebody's so like it was a place that it was a place to rest your head. So then, you know, he's like, okay, I'm like, man, this is not the place to wing it. You could wing it just about anywhere else, but Cuba is not the place to do it. So, you know, we spent some time that first year. I really do believe if you, not to say it's because of me, if you hadn't connected with somebody to kind of show you the ropes, you would have been, you see how it is. There's no way. Somebody goes, there's just, it just doesn't happen. You got to know somebody to kind of walk you along the path. And I remember we ended up having a good time. We did some extracurricular activities that trip. When I say extracurricular, like he told me he likes cemeteries and shooting cemeteries. And we took him to the big cemetery there and you shot some pictures there and just stuff like that. And yeah, that's how we met. And
there's no doubt. I mean, I owe, you know, so much to the idea that, you know, we want to help out where we can. And I've taken that and I do the same thing. You know, if somebody calls me, Kirby, for example, Kirby Allison, who his office is probably, I don't know, 4 minutes, 5 minutes from here. His first year in Cuba was last year. And he came to me and he said, listen, I need some help. And I was like, I'm happy to help out any way I can. This is, you know, if somebody helped me, I'm happy to, well, I'd help anyway. But the idea is that you want to pass that along because Cuba is not the place, as you said, to screw around. You can sit there for, you know, and do nothing. It would spit you out pretty quick. And it almost did me, but without your help, it would have absolutely done that.
And even when you have a connection, James, it's sometimes doesn't matter. Those first couple of years, all the waiting, you know, we had to wait for our press passes, hours upon this, running here, running there. It's not easy. It's just not easy.
Look, it's gotten so much better, especially for the media. Now, 2016, 2017, 2018, you know, they would barely give us like a chair to sit in. A bottle of water was basically the best thing that you could ask for, essentially. That first gala dinner, I stood the entire dinner in a corner until I needed to go shoot something and went and shot something and came back. They gave us nothing. There was no help. There was no, you know, no communication. I was afraid that they were going to put, you know, it felt like that they didn't want us there. Right. And
they didn't know you, Brooks. They didn't know you.
So true. This gotten so much better since then. Miles and miles and miles better. And part of that is because people stood up for some very, you know, important people stood up for us and said, hey, listen, you know, the journalists deserve to have more than what you're giving them help wise and just, you know, information and access. And some of it, I think, is just their appreciation for the fact that they will get better coverage if they give us a certain amount of things in terms of letting us go certain places and do certain things when we need to. For example, I fought for the longest time to get into the humidor auction, into the gala dinner before the gala dinner started, so that we could get pictures of those humidors before everybody started crowding around and getting in the way. And I told them, listen, this will make better pictures. It will do better for you. And eventually they conceded, and now, you know, quite a few people get in there early. And I'm not saying I was the only one, but the idea is that, you know, if you explain to them, listen, this is going to help you, then a lot of times it will pay dividends eventually.
Yeah. I read your article from today where you said, yeah, you were able to get in early to take pictures of it, but like, it didn't matter because there were still so many people in there. You weren't getting like a clean picture, and coming from your background, I would imagine that's very important to you, is to get just the right shot, because you're conveying a story, not just through the written word, but through your photographs and through your art, through the photography. So when you go, when you're going to Cuba, let me back up. What changed besides somebody standing up for you guys and saying, hey, media needs access. You need to give them access. It's better for you. Was the attitude beforehand, oh, they're media, they're probably like spies. Like, was it they're fucking Americans? Was it that? Or was it just they didn't know really how to treat media because they've never had to really deal with it before?
I think that it was a combination of things. I don't want to speak for them, so I don't know exactly what the issues were.
Sure.
I do know that, you know, there was a change in the leadership and the people who run the media there. And once that happened, Daimi is the main contact that we have, and her boss, maybe not. The person, Daimi and Alex, are wonderful people. And they are truly trying to help out when it comes to what we need. They ask, what do you need? What can we help you with? But it goes way beyond that now. Before, we didn't get cigars. We didn't get anything.
Well, right? I mean, yeah, it's true. But I'd have to interject. Again, they didn't know who you were. They didn't know. Like, you think Cigar Aficionado didn't get all those things? I don't want to say, but
I don't know.
Certain people were getting these things. In fact, years later, I mean, I don't know what year that, what's his name came there? Charlie, what year was he? Huh?
It was 2000, oh, I don't know, 2000, 2021, one of those.
Okay, so he shows up, and again, I don't think they even really knew. So Charlie comes to me, I think, or Brooks, say, hey, can you get him a ticket to the gala? Because he can't get a ticket. They're not available. I said, well, I can get you a ticket, but let me see what I can do. So I went up to him and I said, look, you need to give this guy a ticket. They're like, well, he can buy a ticket. I go, no. He's half wheel. I said, you need to give him a ticket. And they're like, okay. So they did. So I got him a ticket. Remember that? And he's like, Charlie's like, I'll pay you for it. I go, listen, I didn't pay for it. You don't pay for it. So
we tried to pay for the gala dinner, and it they never allow us to do that, which is fine. Yeah, I mean, I think that's partly correct as well. I think that they were still feeling things out. They were still learning things. They were stuck perhaps in the past where CA was the name and everything like that. And CA is important, and they're great people, don't get me wrong. But there are more people on the block now. And I think that it just took them a little while to catch up and say, okay, it's not just, you know, one magazine. It's now online stuff. There's more magazines. And it's more than just that, you know, that two people or three people that come every year kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't feel like that attitude is exclusive to Cuba or Habanos SA. That attitude is slowly changing. I mean, it took the PCA years to kind of change that attitude. Right. So,
yeah.
So let's go back to Cuba. I don't want to talk about the PCA right now. Let's go back to Cuba.
I want to talk all about No.
All right. So day zero, like
another show.
Yeah, another show. Walk me through day zero. Like, what was your experience this year, Brooks? What did you see? What really grabbed your attention on day zero?
So when I got there late. And the problem was that I was going through Houston instead of Miami because I can't stand Miami Airport. So I decided to go through Houston instead of Miami. And the problem is that as one of the changes, the main changes that Habanos has made in terms of the journalists and how they react with or how they interact with us is that they have started doing an exclusive event before the actual festival starts. Journalists only. Typically, we have a cigar that is shown off that nobody else has seen or very few people have seen. And certainly nobody else has smoked almost. It's been some really good cigars in the past. And this started, I believe, 3 years ago, I want to say 4 years ago. They do it every year now. And so you know that you're going to do it and you're going to get there. And assuming that you're invited, you're going to, you know, you're going to show up. But the problem was I got in late. And so I had to rush over there. So basically, I basically rushed from the airport, which has gotten better in terms of how they react to people as well. Doesn't take 4 hours to get your luggage anymore, thankfully. I jumped in the car. We have a driver pick me up and jumped in the car, went to the place we were staying in Nautico, and then dropped my stuff off and went straight to the event. And it was about halfway done. They had almost taken the cigars, you know, that they were showing off down, and I had to actually kind of stop them and go, hey, you know, I need to actually picture with that if you don't mind. So I was rushing around and trying to get, you know, trying to get what I needed done immediately for that point. But I knew it was going to happen. I knew that was going to be the case. So I was ready for it. They did it in, this year was in it. Usually they have it on in the,
Packard,
the name.
Packard Hotel.
Huh? Packard.
The Packard Hotel.
I get the Packard and the Palco mixed up. So yeah, they have it in the Packard Hotel, which is on one of the floors up there. And it's always so windy. You can't smoke a cigar, literally can't smoke a cigar. So they changed it. And now it's at a brand new place that just opened, Club Italia, something or another, Club Italia, Cabana Italia, something like that. And it was great. It was a wonderful looking place. It was excellent.
So very nice accommodations.
Oh, it's really a great thing for them to do for us. Unnecessary. I mean, I was never expecting that, to be honest with you. I wouldn't expect that in the U.S., to be honest with you. And they do a wonderful job with it. And it's a great thing to be able to go to and see all your friends and see the people that you interact with every year. It's a great thing. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, they definitely stepped up their game this year because the Packard, as he was saying, it's on the mezzanine floor, which is open. And even though it was one of the newer hotels, this was a way better location. It's actually a hotel restaurant, just really nice. It was a very, very nice event.
Nice. Yeah. So they've made it seems like they're coming along. They're making a lot of good changes. And this is one of them. So day zero, that's what catches your attention. Day one, like this is the first real day of the festival. What are you looking for, Brooks? Like, what is it on day one that you're really trying? I mean, I know you're trying to get across because look, people ask me like, why do you go to the trade show? Why do you cover the trade show? That because you can't go, because as a consumer, you can't go. And there's a lot of people that can't afford to go to Cuba. It's hard to get to Cuba because of the embargo and all the rules in place. So what are you trying to get across when you're there? I'm going to assume it's kind of the same thing. You're just trying to get across what's there. So what on day one are you looking for that you want all of the rest of us that can't afford it or just it's too much of, you know, jumping through hoops to go? What are you trying to get across to us?
Well, the problem, the good thing in the curse of the Havana Festival is that it is pretty much the same year after year after year in terms of what they are doing and the events that are happening. You always, almost always, I guess, I, since I've been there, you have a dinner on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You have the opening of the trade shows on the first day, Monday. They have the press conference before the opening of the trade show, which goes through all of the, you know, how much money they made and you know, all the new releases and that kind of thing. So you know basically what you're going to be doing pretty much every day, all day long. And it's a little difficult for me as a photojournalist, former photojournalist, a little difficult for me to capture something different. It, you know, I could go in there and I could take the same pictures over and over again. And sometimes I have to in order to, you know, convey what's going on. But my point, my idea is to try to get something different, different emotion, different angle, different something or another, because people are looking at a whole bunch of my past articles and I don't want them to see the same picture over and over and over again. Because that's just not how photojournalism works. No. And so the idea is to try to go in there with fresh eyes and try to get something different every time. In terms of what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to show the scope of what the place is. And my writing is subpar at best. But even in my writing, I try to explain how things are. Like my first year at the festival, I thought it was this huge festival like PCA. Right. I thought I was going to walk into this trade fair and be blown away by 15, you know, levels of, you know, huge, you know, people hawking stuff. And it's nothing like that. It's two levels. And there's probably fewer than I want to say maybe 100 vendors, wow, give or take. It's a small trade fair. And I was blown away by that. I was like, where's the rest of it? Surely there's another building behind this somewhere with all these other people. No, that's all there is. And half the vendors are people selling things like custom humidors and antique like bands, like cigar bands from the early 1900s and things like this. So yeah, it's incredibly interesting, but it's not what you think it is. It's certainly not, and that's, you know, basically the way Cuba is. It's never what you think it is. It's always what it is.
And forgive my ignorance, because I personally don't know. Is it everything there run by the government? Is it all? I mean, Habanos SA, right? They deal with all the cigars, right? But the humidors and you say they're selling the bands and things like that. Is that all government controlled and regulated? And
so I don't know for sure, right? Nick probably knows more. In fact, I know he knows more than I do about that. I will tell you that the government shadow is over everything. So even if it's not run directly by the government, the government is definitely in the picture somewhere. There's no doubt about that. And people you talk to and people that you interact with, it's very obvious that the government is a very overwhelming presence in their lives, especially compared to someplace like America. And it's disconcerting to see, I've traveled all over the world. I've lived all over the world. My father was military, so we moved a lot. I, learned how to snow ski in the Swiss Alps, and I learned how to water ski in the Panama Canal. And I've been all over the world, and I've never seen anything like it. It's a very disconcerting place to be at.
To add to that, as far as the booths, the ones that are international vendors that are selling, like Brooke said, the humidor makers like Adorini and some of the others, no, they pay a fee. They apply for a visa, a business visa. And yeah, there's little other than the vetting that has to go on for them to be there. Now, there are a lot of smaller booths that are selling, antique watches, anything related to, and some things not related to cigars that are there. They also have to get a license and be there. And yes, the government is on top of everybody. And to make things worse, these last couple of years, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that the current president seems to want to be there, but it causes a lot more of a security issue with everything.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Yeah. Yeah, let me ask you this, Brooks, because I've heard Nick talk about it, but I want somebody else's perspective. Is the government, I mean, you say they're always there, they're always watching, the shadow of the government looms, and I understand it. Yeah, I don't like it, right? But I understand it, that it, just because of the political tensions between our two nations, are they constantly watching you and Nick and other Americans more than anybody else, or is it just?
I got to be honest with you. I don't know. I'm certainly not a spy, so I have no idea how that would work.
I would have been like, what?
They could be watching me all the time, and I would have no clue. I will say that I never go into a public space in America or anywhere, to be honest with you, and not assume that I am being photographed, videotaped, or watched. And it's doubly the case in Cuba. I doubt seriously they have anything bugged. I'm not sure they have the technology necessarily to do that. But I assume that is the case. Everywhere I go in Cuba, something I say is going to be videotaped or whatever, because it's possible, and that's their right to be able to do that in their country.
Yeah, but they're not trying to censor you on what you can photograph, or are they?
No, nothing like that has happened to me, other than the idea of not giving me access to certain places, which is not unusual when you're talking about taking photographs of certain things. For example, in America, when I'm shooting for newspapers, we have a certain panache. We are able to do certain things and get away with it. Nick mentioned, the president was there last year for the first time at the trade show. He opened the trade show. And so all of us photographers were down there in a line that you normally see at events, taking photographs of them talking and cutting the ribbon and all that. And after they cut the ribbon, the president and his entourage climbed the stairs up into the main part of the trade show fair. And I followed them because there were photographers up there already. And so my thought is, hey, there's photographers up there. That means I could go up there. And I was basically almost tackled by somebody with a very large gun. And they said, no, you can't go up there. basically. I mean, I don't know exactly what they said, but that's basically their line. And I was like, look, dude, there's photographers out there. Why can't I go? Oh, look, I got a press pass right here. And eventually I found out those are his photographers, not other photographers. So, no, you can't go up there. And I'm like, okay, all right. Hey, listen, you know, you don't want me to go up there. You've got the gun, dude. I'm not going to argue. So, if I was in America, I would have pushed it. Hey, listen, I'm going to go up there because that's my job. Here, you can't do that. That's not, you know, you have to back down. And it's hard for me because I'm used to being able to apologize and not ask permission. And here, you know, in Cuba, you can't do that. It's you're definitely within this box, regardless of whether you're actually physically in a box. You're always in this box of you can screw up really, really badly, even if you don't know you're doing it. And it would probably end badly for you if that was the case.
Now, if I can add a little bit, some of the things that Brooke said.
No, you're good.
You said you don't know if they have the technology. I can tell you there's two areas that Cuba spends a lot of money on. And one of them, if it's not the number one, is on technology when it comes to surveillance. And that's what they do. And yeah, you can't fight the system. The second only, not to make this thing run long, but the second thing that I have to say is one of the most stringent things that they do is vet the journalists. They do not give those visas very, very easily, because generally speaking, as Brooke said, you know, we're not spies, but we're Americans. So right, automatically that puts us in a different category to be vetted even harder than that. And then, yeah, they do not. All the spies, so many spies have come in because from different countries, not just the U.S., under these journalist visas. So they do do a very thorough process. So once you've been there a few times, they get to know you. And so they're a little bit more lax, and they know you're there to do a job, but you still have to confine to the box that they put you in. Like, you know, especially now with the security, with the president being there. You know, that's just how it is. It's Cuba, as we say.
Yeah. You know, we could go through day 2, 3, 4, 5 and all of that. But look, I'm going to link this in the show description, guys. So if you're listening to this, just check the show description or go to simplystogies.com and check the show description. And I'll link day 0 through 5 and you can go read Brooke's account and look at the pictures that he took. But because you said, Brooks, that this is essentially the same thing every year and there's not a whole lot of deviation from what they've done in the past. And it's so from a you know, photojournalist perspective, it's kind of hard to capture that. But I was really taken aback by how you described your driver's life, his family's here in America. His wife and his child are here in America. His parents are there in Cuba still. And he wants to come over, but even if he could come over, if the Cubans were to let him come over, you don't know that he would because his parents are there. I want to kind of talk about what you saw there from a photojournalistic perspective, just the overall state of Cuba. Now, I know that Nick's talked about the rolling blackouts and the brownouts and whatnot, but that didn't seem to be a problem this year. Kind of just give me an overview, kind of what your general feeling was this year. Is it getting better, worse? What's the state of Cuba overall?
You know, I think it's better than it was when I went back, when I went to the Cohiba 55th event last year, September, I believe, maybe, or a year before.
2021. Yeah.
Time since seems to get away from me. I apologize. 2021. It was really, really bad. They were using water bottles as currency, and you know, people were very, very upset and discouraged. It was nowhere near that bad this time. People seemed happier, you know, for what happiness is there, and seemed like they could get, you know, some things that perhaps they couldn't years ago, a couple of years ago. But it's never a great situation for the local populace there. It's a situation where they're constantly missing things that they wish they had, that they, you know, staples. It's not like America where I could wish that I had fast internet, but I already have internet. They can't get, sometimes they can't get things like paper, pens, you know, cooking oil, things like this, eggs. things that you really take for granted here that they can't get a hold of. And even if they could, they couldn't afford it. The government gives, from what I understand, the government gives the people certain staples and certain food and that kind of thing. But sometimes the government runs out. And when that happens, then there's, you know, virtually nowhere for them to go to get it. And it's not a great situation for them. And it's one of the things that really has affected me as I continue to go back year after year and see the same people and meet new people. I'm overwhelmed by how positive the average Cuban person is. You know, I've even asked them, why don't you hate Americans? If I was in your place, I might hate anybody from America. It seems like that, you know, we could make your lives a lot better pretty quickly if we wanted to, and or if the government wanted to, I guess. And they don't hate us for the most part. They're very, very generous and hopeful. They're wonderful people by and large. I've really come to respect exactly who they are and how they survive. I'm blown away by their generosity. For somebody like us who comes there with we have everything that the world that you can imagine. We come there, we stay there for a week, we, you know, work or party, and then we leave and go back to our lives, and they're stuck there with their, you know, existence that they have. And it tears me up more and more every year that I can't help them more. We bring things to them. You know, we the people that I stay with, we chip in and we bring an entire suitcase full of various products to the people that we meet there. You know, toothbrushes and razors and things like this that again, I could go to Costco and buy a pallet of razors if I want to, literally have it delivered to my door next day.
Yeah.
And they can't find one for months. It's a very, it's something that I really try to keep in mind as I'm walking around my life here in America.
It sounds like it's almost a humbling experience to go and to realize just kind of how much we have, even the poorest of the poor here, what they have and what they have access to compared to what the Cuban people have access to.
Well, certainly. And look, again, I've been to Nicaragua. I've been to, you know, Dominican Republic. I've been to Honduras. So, you know, this is not unusual in terms of these countries that produce cigars, right? You know, the vast majority of them are countries where people are making very little per day and have a much less lavish lifestyle than we do here in America. But the difference is that with Cuba is the government is, again, you know, just part of your life, just inherently part of your life. You know, people here who say, oh, the government's in my business and the government is, you know, they're keeping the, you know, keeping whoever down or whatever it is. They have no idea what they're talking about. This government I'm not going to say that it's horrible. I don't know enough about it to be able to say something like that. But what I can tell you is that it is a shadow that covers every part of people's lives. It's definitely something that they have to learn to live with. And I want to be able to help, but there's only so much that I can do in a situation that I'm in.
Let me, because you said that, you know, so there are, we've talked about this on the show before, but if you're unfamiliar, you can spend money with the people directly, but you can't spend money with anything that is government owned when you go to Cuba. Is that right?
Legally. As an American, that's correct. Yes.
Okay. All right. So then I also read where you said you were kind of shocked that the kook is that it's not the cuck. That's a totally different thing. The kook you weren't using that very much. It was everybody wanted
it's
dollar.
Gone.
The
no,
American
no, no.
Dollar.
The kook is gone.
It's gone.
Now it's now they have the CUP.
Nick is the guy to ask about that for sure.
Not the first word, the second word. it's called the CUP now, the local. Well, one of the things I think that really, it was like I said, we did it on the Cuba series, part of the trifecta of things that happened at once, which was pandemic. They changed the money. And then, you know, here in the U.S., things changed and, you know, the Trump administration took away the ability to send, you know, wire transfers, you know, Western Union. So it really screwed them up bad, the people we're talking about. So, yeah, no, the CUP is a difficult thing to use because they want U.S. dollars. At least now they take U.S. dollars. Last year it was only euros. So this year they're actually allowing the U.S. dollars. You go to a cigar store, and mind you, the day before there was nothing on the shelves. They were completely bare at every Casa de Habanos. Now that Sunday, they started loading them, you know, loading the shelves. And as quickly as they're putting them up, they were coming down because there was, you know, 2,500 participants of the cigar festival that they brought in, you know, and they pretty much bought everything off the shelves.
So you said about $5,000 would be more than enough U.S. currency take down there and kind of be comfortable.
Well, $5,000 is the way you can take without actually declaring it. Yeah, so I would suggest that you stay at $5,000.
Stay at $5,000, but you're saying you would be you'll still be comfortable at that level.
Yeah, I took $4,500 in various currencies. I didn't use anything except American cash, and was just fine. Yeah. And, you know, we went out to dinner and, you know, you don't eat the dinner at the festival events. And it's fine. You know, look, things are when I started in 2016 and Nick, oh man, I one of my fondest memories is Nick bitching just constantly about how bad cab fares had gotten. You know, I remember when we got, you know, we went from the National to the, you know, across the frigging country for Tim Cook. And, you know, I'm like, you know,
Not Tim Cook now.
Yeah.
No, the bitching was that they just constantly, and that happened, you know, your buddy over there, you tell them how you took a cab one time and the normal rate, a decent rate would have been $20, sure, which is still high, but it was 20. Well, the guy didn't want to take less than 60, you know, and they were $60. That's what pisses me off. That's what I bitch about is the gouging that happens. It's like, look, I get it. I'd rather tip you than you sit there and force me to try to pay you three times the rate when I know what the real rate is. That's what I bitch about. Tell him, Brooks.
I understand completely.
That's what happened to you. And I chuckled and laughed. And Tim Donahue, who's another journalist who works for Tobacco Reporter, I think it's called.
Correct.
He was telling me, and him and Brooks share a house, the house that they're talking about. And he was telling me that, and I was trying not to laugh out loud, but that's what happens over there.
Look, if you're going to get a cab in Cuba, you always, always, always get the price up front. Always. Don't ever, ever not do that. We didn't. We were a little tipsy and we didn't do that, and it bit us for sure. And that's, you know, it happens, and that's the thing is you can't go into Cuba and think to yourself that you're going to play by the same rules that you do here. It's not even close. At the end of the day, you're still there as a visitor, and we have to play by, you know, the rules that we're given. Now that doesn't mean paying $60. We paid them $40, I think, at the end of it. And he was
double what you were supposed to.
I think he eventually, you know, relented, and that was the end of it. But we couldn't pay him $20 and get away with it. We probably, you know, and look, we tip when we're there. You know, we tip an enormous amount at just about everybody. We are well aware of the fact that, you know, $100 to us is one thing, but $100 to somebody else could change their life for months. Yeah. And so when we're there, we take money specifically. I take money specifically to help people out and to say, okay, you know, you're charging $20. Well, I'm going to give you $40 instead, just because, you know, I can, basically.
I want to switch gears for just a second here, but have you had any kind of, let me just ask, what has the reaction of Cuban Americans been to Half Wheels coverage, to your coverage specifically, of the festival?
I don't know of any that have told me specifically they were Cuban Americans.
Okay. All right. So you haven't had, because I know that there's this, because when we talk about the embargo, there's these folks here in the U.S. that have come from Cuba are like, we don't want the embargo to go away. And it would certainly help the Cuban people there in Cuba if the embargo went away. So you haven't had anybody say, why are you guys covering this? Why are you going to Cuba? Why are you shining a light on them? nothing like that.
You know, we've had people, I've had people who have asked, you know, listen, this is a government that is not the best when it comes to certain aspects of, you know, human rights and things like that. And my response is always the same. This is news. And, you know, I understand the idea behind not giving people coverage. But at the end of the day, this is part of what we are trying to inform people about. You know, the rest of the world smokes, you know, Cuban cigars, and we don't. And we're not just a U.S. website. In fact, every single day we're gaining more and more international viewers. And we have to be aware of the fact that it's not just America who is watching our website. And we want to be the website of record when it comes to the cigar industry. And we have done that, I think, for the most part, but we have to continue doing it. And sometimes it means going to places that and giving coverage to places that maybe is not the most ideal situation, but it's still absolutely newsworthy in terms of what we're trying to cover.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, is that in today's media, you're not just local and you're certainly not just national. If they have access to the internet, like they can listen to us, they can watch us, they can read us, they can do whatever from almost anywhere in the world. And I think that's a very salient point that a lot of people, it just kind of goes over their head because they're like, oh, well, you're an American. You can't smoke Cuban cigars. You can't buy them. Like, why would you cover it? Well, because it's important, because it's part of the culture. In fact, it's a big part of cigar culture. And I think go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's natural for people to, you know, look on it as a U.S. centric thing because we're based in the U.S. and we're in, you know, English language and that kind of, for the most part, and that kind of thing. So it's a natural thing. But once you explain to them, listen, you know, it's more than just America out here. And you know, there's a whole world out there of people who smoke cigars. And again, we don't want to be just, you know, reviewing non-Cubans through the rest of our lives. We want to be able to reach a larger audience. Once you tell them things like that, then they, you know, they'll come around for the most part.
Well, let me ask you, excuse me, Jesus, words are hard. Let me ask you this, Brooks, because Half Wheel is, you know, the online website of record for cigars. I mean, I think you guys have certainly established yourselves as that, and you and Charlie and Patrick have done a great job there. You guys are always on top of everything and you're everywhere and your coverage is phenomenal. And especially the coverage in Cuba was great, guys. Again, go read it. It's in the show notes. How can Half Wheel and Simply Stogies and Coop and everyone else out there that covers cigars, how can we affect change for Cuba here in the U.S. and with the platforms that we have? Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I know that's a big question.
I'm not sure it's our job to affect change in Cuba. My job is to cover what is happening in the country in a specific time frame. I don't want to get into global politics. I don't know enough about it and how it affects people for me to make decisions based on trying to affect change. I look on my job as somebody who is wanting to explain, tell people that there is more to life than just what is in what they know in America. And that's one of the reasons I really try to highlight people, you know, normal people in Cuba in a situation like this. It's not the best, you know, use of let me take that back. It doesn't really fit nicely into a cigar blog's, you know, a purpose. But I feel strongly that it's important to get the idea of this is not just, you know, we just go here, have a party and come home. There's more to it than that. And as a human being, I think that it's important to realize that there are people out there who are struggling, not just in America, but obviously it's happening too, but in these other countries as well. My job is not to affect a huge amount of change like on a global scale. I don't work for the New York Times, sadly, but I can do what I can to affect, to help people when I can. And that's what I try to do.
Well, don't you think, and Nick, you can answer this as well, but Brooks, don't you think that by going down to Cuba for the festival, for the 24, all these things that you guys go down there for Cuba once or twice a year, and you do a great job of not just documenting the festival, but kind of life outside the festival a little bit, and you kind of show that it is hard and things are difficult there. You don't think by doing that, by shining that kind of spotlight on that you're having any kind of impact whatsoever on especially here in America, the feelings towards Cuba and the embargo?
Well, let me answer first, Brooks. I was going to give the same type of response that Brooks did. If I would not have been able to travel to Cuba as often as I do over the last 15 plus years, and I make it very clear that I am there as a cigar smoker, a hobbyist, aficionado, journalist, brand owner of my own stuff, totally, you know, enveloped in this whole cigar lifestyle. And I go there as a cigar guy, not as a politics guy. And the last thing I would ever try to do is interfere with the local politics. In fact, I make it very clear, anybody that asks me anything related is, you know, I had a cigar club there for many years that was called Club de Fumadores. And rule number one is no politics. You come here, you smoke cigars. We're here as ambassadors of cigars, and we talk about cigars, nothing else. And that way we're there to do. Now, do we try to help the local people when we can by tipping, by bringing things constantly? We all do that. When we go there, we bring things for people and we do, and we're helping the people.
Not everybody does that. Not everybody does that.
Well, the people that can see the plight of the Cuban, you know, people there and what goes on, it's hard not to do that. But yeah, I guess you're right. But by us going and doing that, that affects the people, you know, and I think getting the message out more so in Brooks's case, you know, it does shine a light on this, but it's not done as an attempt to.
No. And I don't, and let me be clear. I don't mean to say that you're trying to do it on purpose and that's your goal. Obviously everything that the three of us do, especially with media, is it's all cigar centric and it's all around cigars. But that doesn't mean that you don't have some effect, both abroad and here at home, on how people see Cuba and how people see the Cuban people. So let me be clear. I'm not saying that you're doing it on purpose or that anything. I'm just wondering if in the back of your mind, when you're doing these things and you're writing your articles and you're taking your photos, if that's something that you're like, this is, people are going to see Cuba in a different light. They're going to see the Cuban people in a different light.
I hope that what I write and what I photograph allows people to understand how their lives are different than the lives of other people around the world, and especially in Cuba and in these other countries. I want to be able to show people that there's a world out there that they may not understand and not know about, and I don't understand a lot of it. I am not an expert when it comes to global, global intricacies or governments or anything of that nature. And so I don't want to get into things that I am not even knowledgeable about, to be honest with you. But I do know when people are having a hard time here, there, wherever, and I want to be able to show that we're all people who are affected. I have a son, and Junior, the person you were talking about with my last day coverage, you could tell when you're talking to him that he is, you know, very affected by this, as anybody would be. I can't imagine being away from my family, and not being able to see them, based on things that I have no control over. It's a horrible situation. And when I look at that, I think to myself, I can't imagine that in my own life. And he's living with it every day, single day. And I wanted to get the point across that as a father, I understand the idea behind what he's behind. I can't, because I don't have the same problem. I can't really tell exactly, but I can understand the idea behind if something like that were to happen, how I would feel, and it would not be a great feeling.
No, no, absolutely. And that was really all I was trying to get to, is because that blurb that you put in on your day five coverage about your driver, it's not cigar centric at all, but it shows just a snapshot of what one person is dealing with there on the island. And that's probably some of the least problems that he has to deal with on the island.
It was probably a mistake, to be honest with you, but you can look back at my coverage of the festival in years before I started trying to explain things like that. And you can see there's nothing like that there. And it's affected me in ways that I didn't think that it would, to be honest with you. And I feel mostly I feel hopeless. I feel not hopeless. I feel helpless. I can do things like take money and take things and give tips and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, I get to come back here and I get to, you know, drive my car and see my son and do all the things that I normally do and take for granted. And they don't. And it's not a great feeling. And when I come back, there's a hard time getting back into the American way of life. And I don't know how to explain it, but it's very disconcerting to have that dichotomy between, you know, what you felt there and the people there and the people here, who by and large, you know, have no idea what's going on. And if they did, they probably wouldn't care. Half the people I talked to think the embargo ended 20 years ago.
Yeah. And,
I mean, you know, it's a situation that I'm hoping that in a very small way, I can say, you know, somebody can read that and go, wow, you know, I have it really, really good here. And maybe I should try to help somebody that isn't as fortunate.
Well, let's bring this back to the festival and the auction, which raised by all measurements, it was a record breaking year. As far as money raised, and all that money goes to the hospitals there in Cuba. Is that right?
Cuban healthcare system.
Cuban health system.
There you go. So maybe the hospitals. But it was a large amount of money. How many humidors did they have this year? You said there was a surprise humidor that wasn't even on the auction list.
Correct. So typically they do six or seven humidors, one for each of the global brands, which I can name for you if you give me a minute. But Partagas, Romeo Julieta, Monte Cristo, H. Upman, Cohiba, and missing one, Nick.
Monte Cristo.
Huh?
Monte Cristo.
There's something else I'm missing. Hoya de Monterey. I don't know how many. I wasn't counting. I'm sorry. Anyway, the global brands, they usually do one for. This time they did.
Trinidad.
There you go.
Global, which is not
the highlight.
But because it was highlighted, the event was for the 55th anniversary of the Trinidad brand, which is what I'm smoking here. The 55th anniversario. And they had the special one, which they weren't announcing ahead of time. It was the Cohiba Year of the Dragon. Lanceros is what was in that box. They had had it. They had it on display at the trade show. I took some photographs of it, but there was nothing ahead of time. There's no idea that there was going to auction that off.
So the money goes to support go ahead.
That's a regular size humidor. Sorry. It's regular size. It wasn't a big one.
Desktop.
Okay. So it wasn't like these works. I mean, they're literal works of art that they parade out and they auction off for millions of dollars. And they're awesome. They're great. Like if I had millions of dollars, I'd probably.
They're amazing, amazing works of art. And yeah. It's just astounding. I met some of the artists who actually put them together in Cuba. Some of them are putting. They're amazing people and amazing works of art. It take a year to put together. It's astounding. So, at least a year.
for you, Brooks, and then Nick, I'll go to you next. Like, what were the highlights this year? What are the new releases that they announced that you're excited for that you think will do well? I think they'll all do well globally. But what were you excited for that they announced? And like, what were some of the highlights from the festival for you, Brooks?
Nick, I'm going to let you take that first.
Well, it was kind of obvious that, I mean, I kind of knew it was going to happen without them even telling us that Trinidad was going to be the focus this year. And the reason for that is, as you know, the Cohiba and Trinidad brands tripled in price in the last year. So Cohiba did well. Now, they both do well. But Trinidad, talking to all the distributors around the world, was pretty much falling on its face. They weren't selling. They were basically, you talk to the distributors and like, they're killing this brand. So they had to do something quick. They can't backpedal and go back to their regular pricing. So they have to keep elevating the brand of Trinidad, because Trinidad came out as a replacement to Cohiba when it went commercial. You know, that brand came out in 1966 via Fidel, and it was given to diplomats and dignitaries. And then in the 80s, it went commercial. And then the replacement for that was Fidel's choice, was this brand called Trinidad that he created as well. So that became the next up level cigar. And even so, the whole world kind of still gravitates and knows Cohiba, especially the Asian market. And I just don't think the Trinidad is doing as well, nearly as well, not even in the Asian market. So the rest of the world, they're not going to be able to afford it, even though they were more available than there were Cohibas. It's the pricing. So that's the big focus this time was all about Trinidad. Everything was Trinidad. So yeah, that's the first point. The second, what are the highlights? I'm glad they fixed one very key thing that really drove me nuts last year. During the second dinner, the Wednesday night dinner, they decided to do you're paying like $800 to have a stand-up cocktail hour. And then they tell you there that you have the opportunity to buy two boxes of something that won't be released the following year. So then it was a mad rush. I mean, there's literally, you know, fist fights. I didn't see any, but I mean, there was a lot of scraping and just a mad line. And so you're there spending all this money to have the privilege to stand in line for 3 hours and then not be able to get some because they were getting put up in the beginning. So that was a big faux pas. So they got rid of that. They had a different system I won't go into right now. Maybe Brooks will write about it. But, you know, it's a different – that was a very pleasant change. They went back to a sit-down dinner on Wednesday, so that was actually very nice. And they did try to fix certain things. Certain things, you know, they're still working on, you know, but as the saying goes, it's Cuba. Brooks, I let you give your thoughts.
Yeah, I was impressed. You know, the what you were talking about was the gold medals, the Boulevard new gold medals, and they shocked everybody. I don't think anybody had any idea, at least not with that weren't in Habanos, that they were going to do this. And what happens is, for the first time in the festival's history, they decided to sell boxes of cigars that had not been released yet during the festival. And so we're all sitting around, you know, oh, this is a normal Wednesday event. You know, we're going to stand around and they're going to have some cool stuff on stages. And then we're going to, you know, get some cigars and then we're going to go home. And people started running. I saw people running and tripping on stairs and stuff. And I was like, you know, I don't know what's going on. So, you know, we went in there and there's a mass of people around a table. And when I found out what was happening, I was like, there's no way this is happening. I was dumbfounded. But we stood there and I stood behind the table because I was able to. And I stood behind the table and I thought seriously that people were going to start throwing punches and that they were going to start. It was a mad rush and people were screaming at each other and pushing and shoving. And these are people worth, you know, some of these people are worth millions of dollars and they're fighting over, you know, two boxes of a cigar that it was a really. It was an interesting look into the human nature, to be honest with you. And it was a shocking thing, but I think Habanos realized that was not the best way to do that after it happened. And so they knew that they needed to change that. And so they made a change during the press conference. They said you know, listen, we realize that there's a problem here. We made a change, and this is going to be the best way going forward. And so what they did was they basically said, okay, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to have an opportunity to buy these cigars, extra boxes of these cigars. But we're going to give you a ticket, and the ticket will give you this many cigars, and you basically just go pay for the cigars, and then you can pick them up whenever you feel like it. And that's really the best way to do it. It worked out great. There was a line, but it wasn't that long, and it worked out that people could get them whenever they really wanted to. And there was, as far as I know, there was no issues with it, at least certainly not the way that they were before. As a point, however, journalists, at least I, was not given the opportunity to buy extra boxes. Which is interesting. I would have loved to have been able to do that. We did get a ticket from somebody. Kirby, in fact, gave us our ticket. Thank you, Kirby, if you're watching this. And whenever it goes live, sorry, I know it's not live. I wasn't able to purchase any. Our credit cards were declined because of being American or whatever. So it's fine. It's not a big deal. In terms of that, it's just one of those things. It's an interesting idea that, you know, you have these tickets and if you can't get them without the ticket. So we got the box, you know, the box of Trinidad's that we got. It's the same box that we got at the festival. So here's the actual Trinidad sampler box that we got at the festival. And you can see here, you put three of those Trinidads in there. And so they were basically able to buy two extra of these per ticket, $380 per three count box is the cost of that.
American,
correct.
Holy shit. I have three questions left, and we'll get you out here, Brooks. I know that we're kind of.
I'm having a great time. You ask as many questions as you want. The wife is probably asleep at this point, so it's fine.
Okay, well, tell her I apologize. I guess you had mentioned that there's a rumor that next year, American credit cards you might be able to use them in Cuba. Like, where did you hear that?
Okay, first of all, not a rumor, because there are people who bought things with American credit cards at the LCDH in the Palco Hotel. Tim Donahue from Tobacco Reporter bought quite a few things with his credit card. And so this is a confirmed situation that you could actually use American credit cards. How widespread that is going to be? Was it a mistake? When I went back to buy something, I was not able to. So, you know, it's Cuba. What are you going to do? However, we were told that it is something that is possible that is going to be put forth in the future, possibly, that it wasn't a fluke. It's possible that that's the case. It's possible it never happens. So you just don't know. But there were actually people with American credit cards who were able to purchase cigars during the festival, 100%.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It will never be official because there is an embargo in place. Therefore, American credit cards do not work there. What happened in this particular case, right, was something known as a little VPN or a circumventing where they were being processed through a third party or third country that were allowed. Now, they can't do a lot. They could never do a lot, but it's who you know. If you have some, I think it's like a last resort thing that they use because a lot of Americans show up there with no money. They don't realize you can't use credit cards. You'd be surprised how many people come there and, you know, have to go borrow $300 from the U.S. Embassy because they have no cash to even get a cab. Happens a lot. So there's ways, and certain people were able to take advantage of that. Again, who you know is what it's about. But as far as it become a mainstream or expect that in the future, not unless the embargo is lifted.
Yeah, I was going to say that would seem like it would almost normalize relations between the two countries a little more than what the embargo would allow.
If you Americans that go there, though, I just.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. How much did it cost to go? If you wanted to go to everything that they offered, every event, every whatever, how much does this festival cost? Do either of you know off the top of your head?
3,750 euros.
Okay, so about 4,000 American dollars.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I will tell you, but the cell phone, which I would look up, is actually the camera, so I can't look it up. Sorry.
Gotcha. That's all right. So we'll just say about 4,000 American dollars. How many cigars did you come away with, Brooks? Because look, when you go to a festival here, like we were talking about my old Kentucky Herf, like you're going to get more than a box of cigars, but you're paying $200, $225 for VIP. Here you're paying $4,000. How many cigars did you come away with?
You know, with everything officially, you come away with probably about 30 cigars, 25, 30 cigars, somewhere around there. But you have to go to everything and do everything. I'm just going to hand them to you. During the events, during the dinners, you get a pack of cigars, typically three pack. Then they give you cigars during dinner. So 3 to 4 cigars, depending on the dinner, size of the dinner. You can either smoke those or not. And then probably one to smoke if you just don't feel like you don't want to smoke all of those or don't want to smoke any of those. Then you go to the seminars and they give you a cigar with the seminars and the tastings, things of that nature. And then the Monday night event, they gave us a six pack sampler of the for the 30th anniversary of something.
Okay. Wow. So it's not
Habanos SA, 30th anniversary of Habanos SA. So right. that was what we got for that. And they were fairly normal cigars. They weren't anything over the top, albeit with a different band.
And they were selling those too.
They were good. It's Cohiba. I mean, you know. Yeah. So you can walk away. Look, you know, when I went to the Cohiba event, we walked away with probably 25 Cohibas. That is, you know, these days, that is not a small amount. I have no idea what they're, you know, valued at. I don't look at such things, but I can imagine it's not cheap.
Well, I guess that kind of goes into my next question. And I know Nick's going to have something to say about this as well. So have at it, Nick. But that kind of speaks to the state of Cuban cigars as a whole, doesn't it, Nick? That you're getting so few cigars for so much money and so much time invested in this event.
Well, they're clearly giving less cigars than they normally do because they want to keep the value. Anytime you get something for free, it devalues. I don't care what it is. So they were very, very more scarce about what they were giving this year. They did give a nice DuPont lighter at the dinner on the middle.
Right,
yeah, pull it up. Show it to them. It's actually a very nice DuPont wide flame. It looks like one of those pinging ones, but it's actually not. It's like you click the side and you get a wide flame on it.
It's the Big D is what they call it.
Oh, the Big D. And then they gave you on the middle, the Wednesday night dinner, they gave you a nice leather case, which had three cigars in that. The first night they gave you a lighter cutter set, for the 30th anniversary of Habanos, which was, you know, launched in 1994. So that was a big year for them as well. So they were giving you little gifts, but if you're going there for the value of what you're getting, you know, I mean, if people are putting them on auction sites, and I'm sure there are people that doing, I would think you'd have a hard time getting back your $4,000 is what I'm going to tell you. You're not doing that.
You don't go there. It's kind of like opening, you know, playing the lottery. You don't go there thinking you're going to get rich by any means. But it's certainly nice to have to get the cigars, and certainly nice to be able to smoke the things before they're released. It's all you know. It's all part of the allure of actually going to an event like this.
Would you, if you weren't going as media, Brooks, would you go personally? Is this a trip you would want to make every year to experience it?
If I could go, if I could afford it, I would go absolutely 100%. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I appreciate both you guys. Your knowledge on Cuba certainly surpasses mine by leaps and bounds. So I appreciate both of your perspectives on this. And I know that I didn't mean to sandbag you with some of those questions, Brooks. That was not my intent. I just kind of wanted to get your honest opinion on it. Last question, and this is totally different than Festival del Habanos. We had Charlie on in December of last year.
I thought.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're the only one. And no, I'm joking. It was one of our most watched episodes. Let me ask you this. Trade show's coming up in a couple weeks when we're recording this. What are you looking forward to the most? I know that Charlie said you guys are going to do things a little bit different this year. Like, but what are you looking for at the PCA looking forward to the most?
I look forward to the PCA every year. It's a lot of work. It's an enormous amount of work every year. But I look forward to seeing people, and I look forward to talking to people. You know, I have a life outside of cigars. You know, Charlie is he's younger than I am, quite a bit younger than I am. And I think he was born the year that I was married to my wife. So he's quite a bit younger, and I've got other things going on. And so for me, I'm not as ingrained in the cigar world as he is, in terms of he and Patrick both. I'm doing more news now, but it's a struggle for me to write well. And, they are very, very good at it. The best that I've ever seen, to be honest with you. So for me, it's just being able to sit and talk to people and say, hey, how's it going? How's the family? How's everything? You make friends and just so many people who've been nice to us and who have helped us out. I really appreciate all of the friendship and all the people who really, care and really make sure you realize that they care. It's a wonderful industry and one I wouldn't change for anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I got to ask the question last night. A viewer, listener sent me an email saying, why so much PCA coverage? Like, not everybody goes, my B&M doesn't go. I don't understand. Like, I click out. Like, when I see that this whole episode is about the PCA, I turn it off. And I can appreciate that and I can respect that. And that's something that I've struggled with a lot. But it's like I told him. And, I kind of want to let everybody know why we cover it. We cover it because of everything that Brooks just said. It is the one time of year that everyone's under one roof and we get to meet everybody in person. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Brooks, in person, Charlie in person when he attends, day two, day three, I think is when he said he was going to be able to be there. And it's our opportunity to get in front of the manufacturers and kind of show them what we do, what we highlight, how we highlight it, and what we're all about. And, as much as we don't take advertisers or sponsors, we want to take advertisers and sponsors. We just want to break even. I'm not looking to make money. I'm not looking to become the next Half Wheel. We don't even do press releases because why compete with the best? There's no reason. And as much as you say, Brooks, that you're not a writer, you write very well. You write just as well as Charlie or Patrick or anyone else there, Hefe. You do a good job.
Thank you so much. But to be honest with you, it's probably Charlie who's changing a lot of stuff in my story. It's just a struggle in terms of getting. I mean, he can write a story. I've seen him write a story about a new cigar in 4 minutes on a bus on a cell phone in Nicaragua, and the man is amazing. And Patrick is just as good. It's just they're so good at what they do. I wasn't trained that way. I was trained as a photographer. And so the photography, unfortunately, a trained monkey could do what I do here at Half Wheel.
You haven't seen my pictures, Brooks.
I'm coming along a little bit, and it only takes me like 20 minutes to write a story now instead of like an hour. So I'm getting better at it. But, it's an amazing thing, the PCA, and in terms of what we're trying to do. But again, it's all work. It's all under this umbrella for us of work. How much time do you have? How much time can you spend talking to this person? It's never enough. And I wish it was more, but.
I wish it was more too. I wish I had more time with you, Brooks. I think we could talk for hours on end, but your wife's already asleep and she's gonna be like, who is this guy and why did he keep you so long? Like, fuck him. And I don't do these
very often. She's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, you're doing a podcast. And like, you're not important enough to do a podcast, are you? And I'm like, maybe I am, maybe I'm not, I guess,
No, you are definitely important enough and you have a perspective and experience and knowledge that I think it's important to get out. And I think it's important that people understand what Festival del Habano is all about and what they do and what they're trying to do and what you're trying to do in covering it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'd like to point out one thing. One of the huge changes they made that I think was really needs to be highlighted very, very quickly. So for the longest time, they've had this rolling class where they have everybody who wants to or pays money go in and they actually get to roll their own cigar with real tobacco with people who are helping them, rollers from the factories. Usually it's held in a huge room, the media room or whatever the room's called. I forget what it's called. It's a big, big room. You got hundreds of people in there. This year, they made a huge change where they took people to five different factories around Cuba, and the people who were rolling these cigars were rolling cigars in the actual factories that they were covering, that they were visiting. So it's a huge change and an amazing, amazing change that I think just really, really highlighted that they're really trying to do things differently. It was an amazing experience, to be honest. We were at the El Higuito, the Cohiba factory, and Nick and Tim and I were there, and I didn't get to roll a cigar, and I don't want to roll a cigar because every time I try, it just turns out horribly. But I was photographing, we had a good time. Nick, I assume that you feel the same way about that change that they made.
Absolutely. That was one of the most important changes I think they made, because it's one thing to just roll a cigar first time or your 10th time in a media room or a big amphitheater type room, and a total different feel when you're actually at the factory. You have the factory people. I mean, the factory people are at the other amphitheater, but there was something special about doing it at the factories. So yes, yeah. I agree 100%.
Well, I guess to me, that just makes sense. This is such a tactile and experiential thing that we do with cigars, to have to be able to do that in a factory in Cuba. There can be no better experience, right?
The legendary factories that these places are rolled. I mean, yeah, it's just, I was blown away. I was like, why didn't we do this before? Whoever thought that idea up is a genius and should get, you know, a raise.
Well, I don't think they should let Nick roll. I feel like that is like you're bringing in a ringer. Yeah, I know, but you're bringing in a ringer. Why would you let Nick roll? The guy rolls all the...
No, I don't. Whatever. I just roll blends.
I think Tim paid somebody to write roll his.
Did. It looked good, did it?
He was right on top of him too. Yeah,
that's He's
like,
awesome.
This turned out great, and I was like, "Well, fuck you, it sure did. Yeah, of course it did."
It sounds like you guys had a wonderful time, and I'm very glad that you did. Hopefully, one day I'll get to experience it. But Brooks Whittington, halfwheel.com. Thank you so much for spending the time with us tonight and sharing your knowledge and your experience. I appreciate it, man. We would love to have you back sometime and talk about anything you want. We can talk about cigars, trade show, like whatever you got going on.
Literally anytime. All you got to do is email me, buddy. This is great. I looked past at some of your past videos and they were amazing. You know exactly what you're talking about. You do a great job getting the questions. And I was blown away, honestly.
It's easy to ask questions when you're the dumbest guy in the room and you're trying to figure stuff out. That's all it is. Brooks Whittington, halfwheel.com. I appreciate it. Nick, that's going to do it. Show in the can. Next week, we've got CTA, Clear the Air, coming out, where we talk about Brooks behind his back and then put it out for everybody to listen to.
Just like high school.
Just like high school. That's right. That's right. So I'm looking forward to see what questions Tim has in store for us. Are you, Nick?
Oh, yeah. As always.
Yeah, me too.
Fuck, and then we turn it back on him.
Fucking secret sauce bullshit. For my friend, Brooks Whittington, halfwheel.com. For Nick Sears, I'm James. Join us next week for Clear the Air. And after that, guys, it's PCA time. If you like the PCA and you want to know all the new stuff coming out, watch. If you don't, I guess don't watch. I'm okay with it either way. We do this for fun and to kind of pass on information to yourselves and to me, because I, like I said, dumbest guy in the room. Until next time, words are hard. Stay smoky, friends.